I'm Elise.
Okay, we'll have the clerk call the case then.
The court will now call Tina Elise versus the state. The man from the court, Ms. Holly Crampton, to argue for the appellate, Ms. Jennifer Ponder, to argue for the state.
May proceed. Thank you.
The facts of this case are relatively simple, and I'm certain that the court is aware, but the 4 mile an hour matter of stopping a vehicle on a dry and otherwise clear without any other basis for a stop is one that as these cases are fact-specific, draws our attention in. And the state and the trial court attempted to rely upon and did rely upon the statutory presumption in the Transportation Code 545.352 in an attempt to create a traffic offense which was not a traffic offense, and instead 545.351, which is the speeding statute relative to the reasonableness of the speed in light of the circumstances, is the fact situation and the law that the DPS trooper was required to look at. And our brief elucidates on a attempt in another case to use a statutory presumption and thereby overcome the underlying statute itself, and the court said that was not permissible. And so to the extent that and the other thing that happened with what and at the trial court level was there was a burden shifting, and the burden never shifts to the defense. And somehow, because of the statutory presumption, was misinterpreted to require the defendant to somehow, rather than show reasonableness of the speed under the circumstances, to defend on the basis of whether or not her speed was as much as just 1 mile. It was not above the speed limit, not a traffic violation, not a valid reason to stop. In the meantime, while this case was proceeding, the case of Rodriguez came down from the United States Supreme Court, and I know opposing counsel furnished me with a case that they be offering at their argument that I believe is from this court in 2016, and the name of that case is Hill King, Christopher Hill King versus the state. And several pages into it, it talks at some length about the Rodriguez case and the matter of unreasonableness of stops and searches. And what the appellant's interpretation of Rodriguez is that the United States Supreme Court was attempting to make clear for all time, if the reasonableness of the stop was lacking, then it didn't matter what the basis for the search was, that the calling of a drug dog, if you couldn't get to the idea that the search itself would be reasonable with or without the drug dog, then calling in a drug dog would not furnish a basis for the search. And, of course, they then got caught up in the matter of the prolonged nature of the search, and they said, look, it doesn't matter if the search prolonging is a few minutes or a lot of time. Because if it wasn't, if the predecessory precondition that the search would have been legal wasn't present at that time, then we never get to prolonged search because the search itself was not legal. This, of course, was a dog search case, and and it was a case in which Trooper Hardin indicated that he was only going to give a warning, but that he needed the defendant appellant to step back in his car where we can see, and the brief elucidates in detail, and we attempt to completely set out the entirety of that conversation that Trooper Hardin had with Ms. Smith relative to where was he going with it, on what kind of a basis, other than the fact that she had California plates and she had was coming from California, that he could all of a sudden start talking about the law in California. And the presence of mind that Ms. Smith had all by herself out there without benefit of legal counsel to walk up to Trooper Hardin, and it's on the video, and say, "I'm sorry, are you searching me because I'm from California?" And he says, "Yes, that's part of it." Now, and where that protection falls is under the 14th Amendment, that as far as the equal protection for the California resident versus the Texas resident. And
any of these were any of these arguments made before the trial court?
Were they made? Yes. Yes, there were two motions.
And the Commerce Clause and all of the things that you raised in this brief, that was all argued to the trial court?
I don't know that we used the word Commerce Clause. Now, the 14th Amendment clause that of equal protection and the United States Supreme Court case of Sains, S-A-I-S-A-E-N-Z, which is the leading case on the matter of the protection of travelers as they go between the states, cites us to the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause as its basis. They and our position is that that is sufficient, and that our motions to suppress both refer. We had an initial one, and we had a supplemental one. The supplemental was when after the Rodriguez case came out, and that we reference that the stop and the search was in violation of the 14th Amendment. And then there were significant, of course, this business of being, of our having California tags and being, was brought to the court's attention time and time and time again, and is on the videotape that the court had and was admitted into evidence. So, yes, we believe that we adequately, perhaps there could have been more done, but adequately placed the points that we were making before the trial court, and that the trial court went off on this matter of the idea that the presumption of that this 545.352 presumption that relates to the posted speed limit being a presumption of reasonableness, that somehow that once the trooper said her speed was in excess of that somehow justified the entirety of the stop, was where we thought we couldn't, that there was a lack of communication between the defense and the trial court.
So it's your position that stopping someone who's traveling undisputedly, or I guess we'll say disputedly, 4 miles over the posted speed limit is not probable cause to stop?
If that's the only basis that you have, in other words, you don't have law enforcement communicating with each other. You don't have, it's in some ways, as we know, can happen. If you don't have a bad road condition, there can be.
What's the point of a posted speed limit? I'm sorry. What's the point of a posted speed limit then? What is the point? If you can go whatever speed you want to go over the speed limit because the road conditions are good and maybe you're not going to endanger somebody, then what is the point of the law that says this is a 75 mile per hour zone?
Well, I would compare it in part to, for a decade or so, 287 between Wichita Falls and Fort Worth was a 55 mile an hour. For the last decade that we've been in, or close thereto, it's 75. You know, there's what you have to look at for it to be speeding is, was it reasonable under the circumstances? Now, the legislature has seen fit to put in an additional statute that says, okay, if you're going over the speed limit, the posted speed limit, then there's a presumption of speeding. However, for purposes of making a stop under the Fourth Amendment, there has to be more than just somebody's going a few miles over the speed limit, because the test we're meeting.
Where is the line drawn? Is it drawn at 5 miles over the speed limit? Or, I mean, you just gave an example where the speed limit jumped 20 miles an hour. So would it have been 20 miles over the speed limit on 287 when the speed limit was just 55?
Well,
where is the line drawn?
Well, I think that Trooper Hardin's testimony in the, and I believe we've cited to it in our brief, but his testimony where he talks about the fact that they only tend to, they do not give tickets for speeds that are 5 miles or less. That, in other words, that it's his position that the DPS can stop because of that presumption statute. However, that it's not a ticketable offense. So I would answer the court with, I think the DPS's position is 5 miles over is what is required.
But that's just the distinction between giving someone a warning and a ticket, not to stop them in the first place.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the point that I would urge you is the fact that the law that we're actually applying here is Fourth Amendment law as opposed to speeding law. That, in other words, that if you have this kind of situation, you have to have more to, and it's, I mean, he obviously, and the underlying record as to the fact that he prolonged printing out the warning ticket and prolonged
it. Just a second. Tell me what the case is that says that if someone is going 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 miles over the speed limit, that is not sufficient to stop the car.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I could furnish that to you. I don't have that case at the top of my head.
I haven't found one.
You have not found one? I know that there are at least a couple of cases, and I thought I had them cited, but that deal with what is required to make a speeding case and deals with the fact that the law is the reasonableness under the circumstances. And I believe they would answer your question, maybe not as pinpointedly direct as your question, but I think that you would find that they would. And I would ask to submit that. And at least a couple of cases, I think there are two that I'm thinking of. And, of course, provide copies to counsel. excuse me. We believe that the situation with the statutory presumption should be made clear by this court, as it has been by the Court of Criminal Appeals, that there's a distinction, and that we cannot rely upon the statutory presumption. Now, of course, the Lemming case has made a chaos of what the Court of Criminal Appeals presently thinks about traffic violations. But that these presumption, and that right now I'm on Fourth Amendment analysis. For purposes of Fourth Amendment analysis, that you cannot have a presumption that throws the burden back to the defendant, appellant in this case, and makes them have to defend and the burden to show that something different than what the stop encompassed. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. Your honors, the state respectfully requests that you affirm the judgment of the 78th District Court in denying appellant's motion to suppress and that you affirm her conviction. Trooper Hardin had reasonable suspicion to stop appellant. The length of the stop was constitutional because before Trooper Hardin finished his traffic investigation, he developed independent reasonable suspicion of narcotics trafficking. Finally, Trooper Hardin did not exceed the scope of the stop because his actions fell within its purpose. Your honors, a couple brief housekeeping points before I go into my argument. I found a misstatement or a typo in my brief on page 47 that it should, on section 1C2 little a, it should read, a change to any of the fact findings in category 1 does not prevent a conclusion of reasonable suspicion. Just to give you all a brief fact summary, just to refresh, because it might have been a while. Trooper Hardin had 6 to 7 years of experience. He stopped appellant for going 79 in a 75, and he did tell her that she would receive a warning. He then asked that he sit in his cruiser with her. She sat in the cruiser while he worked on the warning. She eventually left the cruiser, at which point Hardin called a canine unit. He then finished preparing the warning, and they both waited on the canine for about 4 minutes after he finished preparing that warning. The canine arrived alerted, and troopers found 2.98 pounds of marijuana. There were two separate motions to suppress, each which were denied, and ultimately a findings of fact and conclusions of law. This is a bifurcated standard of review. Fact findings fall under abuse of discretion, whereas the application of the law to the facts is reviewed de novo by yourselves. If the trial court's ruling is supported by the record, under any applicable theory of law, this court must uphold the trial court's decision. And, Your Honors, I think there's been some confusion, especially in appellant's brief, regarding what's necessary for a traffic stop. And you can see that referred to in Rodriguez. It's an analogy to traffic stops to Terry stops. That means reasonable suspicion. Officers must have reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, meaning specific and articulable facts which, taken together with irrational inferences from those facts, reasonably warrant the intrusion. This is an objective standard, and to be reasonable, a stop must be temporary and last no longer than necessary to effectuate its purpose. So appellant was talking about the Texas Transportation Code. 545.351 states that an operator may not drive at a speed greater than is reasonable and prudent under the circumstances. Now, 545.351 needs to be read in conjunction with the following statute, which is 545.352, which says any speed greater than what's found in the Transportation Code or set forth by the Texas Transportation Commission is prima facie evidence that the speed is not reasonable and prudent. Now, this doesn't involve a burden shifting. This is what happens when officers are on the thing. A mandatory presumption, which is what appellant seems to be concerned about, is not occurring in this case. Mandatory presumptions are impermissible because they relieve the state of the burden of proving every element beyond a reasonable doubt. However, what's at issue in this case is not whether appellant was speeding. What's at issue is whether appellant was possessing marijuana. So the officer was, all he needed was reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. And traveling above 75 miles an hour, the posted speed limit, is more than enough of reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, to wit, speeding. And this case is very similar to a decision this court made in Gulledge versus State, and I had cited it in my brief, where the appellant argued that there was no reasonable suspicion for the stop because the officer didn't say anything other than the driver was going 54 and a 40. However, this court found that that was enough, that traveling above the speed limit was reasonable suspicion to perform a stop. Also, Your Honors, about DPS policy, the state's position, it's absurd to suggest that interdepartmental DPS policy as to whether to issue a warning or a ticket replaces the law set forth by the Texas legislature. And this is very much like what you would see in a DWI first versus a DWI over 0.15 example. The DWI first gives you Class B punishment range. A DWI over 0.15 gives you Class A punishment range. All that's different is the punishment. It doesn't mean that the DWI first isn't a violation. It's simply a punishment difference. The law is very clear that you cannot travel above the speed limit. Second, the length of the stop did not violate appellant's Fourth Amendment rights because Trooper Hardin developed independent reasonable suspicion that appellant was trafficking narcotics before he completed his investigation. So the permissible length of a stop is determined by its purpose or mission, and that is to address the traffic violation that warranted the stop and attend to related safety concerns. This comes from Rodriguez and also is cited in this by this court in King versus State, which has been provided. The stop ends once the tasks tied to the traffic violation are or reasonably should have been completed. There is no constitutional stopwatch on a traffic stop. Beyond just issuing a ticket or a warning, the Supreme Court has said a traffic stop can include ordinary inquiries incident to the stop. And this court has said in King, citing Rodriguez, ordinary inquiries are such as checking the status of a driver's license, determining whether there are outstanding warrants, looking at the automobile registration and its insurance. The stop doesn't end upon an officer's verbal declaration that he's going to issue a warning or a ticket. Trooper Hardin testified that it took him approximately 22 minutes to complete his investigation, and that this is normal under these circumstances, specifically because both appellant and her vehicle were from California. There's no evidence to show that Hardin delayed his stop until after he had independent reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. If, during a traffic stop, an officer develops independent reasonable suspicion of criminal activity before the end of the traffic investigation, prolonged or continued detention is justified. And that came out of this court in Hosey versus State. When determining...
Hosey is the real problem in this case.
Your Honor, I don't see any problem in this case, to be frank. I think that the law is very clear that...
Okay, take it from the top for a second. Someone's going 79 and a 75. And on the face of it, that's just a few miles over the speed limit, but they're justified in stopping it is your first position. You have reasonable suspicion the law has been violated, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
More reasonable the moment you find out he's going to give her a warning ticket as opposed to a speeding ticket, because most people travel a few miles more than that before they're stopped, I would imagine. I do. So then you get to this investigative stage when the person's in the police car. And the problem that you have is he hasn't printed out the warning yet. And the reason he hasn't is the reasons you give on page 40 of your brief.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Without those reasons, you're in trouble. Because he didn't print it out, probably, because it wasn't going to release her before that canine got there. That's pretty clear, right?
Yes, Your Honor. He had independent reasonable suspicion and was not.
If you buy into the reasons you have on page 40, then the extension of 4 or 5 minutes, which is an incredibly short period of time, if you have these reasons, you extend it along long enough for the dog to alert.
Yes, Your Honor.
When I was reading some of this, the defense brief indicated that, or one of the briefs indicated that there was a refusal of consent. She was asked twice, will you consent? And she was asked something about a coat. And apparently she testified, or he testified, she wanted to be allowed to get her coat out of the car. That was after the 22 minutes. But it was this refusal to consent that I was curious about. And when I was reading it, I didn't see where she refused to consent. And that bothered me more than a refusal. What I'm getting to is, if I ask you your consent to search your car, and your car is right over here, and you tell me that you're a nurse in California, you really haven't responded to my request, have you? And I didn't see, and that's my question, did I miss testimony where she actually refused? Because I read that it was just totally unresponsive to the question about the consent to search. She never said that I could find, no, you can't. Did she or did she?
Your Honor, she says, I'd rather you not. And she says it twice. It is on the record at 221 and also at 319. And it's heard on the state's exhibit number one at 7.
So there was actual refusal.
Yes, she says, I'd rather not, which is the closest you're going to get to no.
I did not see that. So you're saying the extension to get the canine there is really summarized on page 40 of your brief, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and let me just double check page 40.
And you're also saying this California business really refers to a location where they're growing marijuana, as opposed to you're in some California leftist place that's a terrible place to come from, and therefore it's an equal protection violation.
The fact that she was traveling from California was part of the reason he developed that suspicion.
You say here, origin of the trip was Northern California, known to him to be a marijuana grove location.
Yes, Your Honor.
So my take on this was, it wasn't so much California as it was the area she came from was an area known where you grow a lot of marijuana stuff.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly right. Since Your Honors are very familiar with page 40, I will skip that summary and move on to the fact that that the drug trafficking investigation wasn't unreasonably prolonged. It lasted approximately 4 minutes. And once there's reasonable suspicion, police are entitled to pursue theories so long as they act with reasonable diligence. And calling a canine unit to the scene to perform an open-air search of the vehicle is a reasonable method to confirm or dispel a theory of narcotics trafficking. Further, the scope of the investigation didn't violate the appellant's Fourth Amendment rights. The Fourth Amendment tolerates certain unrelated investigations that do not lengthen the stop. And this comes from Ohio versus Robinette out of the United States Supreme Court. Texas courts have held the following to be within the scope of an investigation: requesting a driver's license, registration, and insurance, using that information to conduct a computer search for outstanding warrants, questioning the vehicle occupants about travel plans such as origin, destination, and purpose, and actually issuing the ticket or warning. So while he was working on the ticket or warning, officers are allowed to ask the driver about matters unrelated to the stop, so long as those questions aren't extensive and don't prolong the initial valid seizure. In this particular case, there's nothing on the record to show that the stop was prolonged, because while he was speaking with her, he was entering the information for the warning in order to run her criminal history, in order to run the insurance, the registration, etc. All the time, and in fact, up until the time he exits the vehicle, he was working on preparing that warning. Your Honors, in conclusion, the state requests that you affirm the judgment of the 78th District Court in denying appellant's motion to suppress, and that you uphold her conviction. Trooper Hardin had reasonable suspicion to stop appellant because she was speeding. Before he completed his investigation, Trooper Hardin had developed independent reasonable suspicion that she was trafficking narcotics and that his investigation of the stop did not exceed the scope permitted by the Fourth Amendment. Do Your Honors have any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
First, I concur with Ms. Ponder that you will find on the record at least two times, perhaps more, statements to the effect of in direct response to could he search, would she consent, that she says, I would prefer you not, or words to that extent. I believe it's said that way, and the way Ms. Ponder said it earlier. The state can be in a position where what they're looking at is there, as far as stops, either a traffic offense is one way to justify a stop, or reasonable suspicion of criminal activity to justify the stop. And I'm somewhat confused because opposing counsel keeps referring to the reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, and that's actually a harder burden for the state than if an actual traffic offense. In other words, if somebody runs the red light, or they don't stop at the stop sign, or they didn't signal, I'm not talking about this situation where what you've got is you have the speed situation so close to the presumption that you can, unless your officer, which he did not, can articulate additional reasons, he can't meet that. What was unreasonable about the speed on that road at that night that justified a Fourth Amendment stop for of this car? And that's where the problem is there. But reasonable suspicion of criminal activity can arise in a plethora of fact situations. You can have the officers watching the neighborhood and comings and goings, and then somebody comes out who's a known drug. You know, there are so many ways to develop reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, but only a handful of miles over the speed limit and nothing else won't get you there. And it doesn't make a traffic offense when the officer himself cannot, does not, is repeatedly asked, tell us what articulable facts there are that show that her speed was unreasonable. And that's the point at which the trooper said, I don't have to show that. I can rely on the presumption statute as if it itself is a traffic offense. One final comment, and that is that Trooper Hardin, when he had Ms. Smith in his patrol car, went way out of bounds of the scope of a couple of miles over the speed limit situation. What in the world, you know, do you have a marijuana medical card have to do with going over a couple of miles over the speed limit? So when you look at his interview with her, it's not just did he develop facts, it's did he have the right to ask the questions? Was it within the scope of his ability to question because of the kind of stop that he had, the quote-unquote criminal activity that he alleged was ongoing? And the answer is no. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crampton and Ms. Ponder, for your briefing and for your arguments. Hope you get to feeling better. But your case is submitted, and that is our last case set for oral argument today, so we will adjourn at this time.
All rise. Now stand in the journey.